Hello, and welcome to a holiday broadcast of One Land, Many Voices. I'm William Seaman. Halagoras sends her best wishes for the holiday season to all of our listeners. Today, we have a special holiday program, a presentation by Reverend Naeem Atik, founder of the Sabil Ecumenical Liberation Theology Center in Jerusalem. Reverend Atik is author of A Palestinian Cry for Reconciliation. He spoke at the First United Methodist Church in Portland, Oregon, on July 16, 2009.
Thank you very much, Dick. Thank you for your kind words. It's very good to be here. I'm very thankful for the church that is hosting us. Thank you very much. And it's really a great privilege to be with you tonight. I've been asked to introduce my new book, and I would like to do it in a way that it will not be too long, so that there will be a possibility for questions and answers and comments. And some of you have already purchased the book. And usually, the book is purchased after a person speaks. So if most of you have bought the book, there is no reason for me to say anything. You know? But some of you have not done it, so let me just say a few words. I'm thankful to God that in this journey that God has given me, that I am always seeking to witness for truth and for justice. I spent most of my ministry in the parishes, just like any other minister, any other priest, trying to really be faithful in my ministry. But because I had this one experience as a boy when we were driven out by force from my hometown, this experience just stayed with me. And it was for many years probably suppressed, so I did not talk about it very much. But I felt more and more that God was leading me to really work for justice and for peace. Because the experience that I experienced as a boy was an unjust experience. When the Zionists came to my hometown south of the Sea of Galilee and occupied the town with no, we did not have any army. There was no violence, there was no killings. We were just occupied. And then a few days later, they gave us 2 hours to get out of our homes. And we lost everything and started a new life in Nazareth. And I went to primary school in Nazareth and then high school, and then came to the United States and studied and went back and started my ministry. So God, by the grace of God, I was led to write a theology, a contextual theology for my people, which we called Palestinian Liberation Theology. So it's a theology that comes out from my context in life, the context of my own people in life. Because many of my Christian brothers and sisters felt that God abandoned them in 1948, that they felt they did not do anything to Jews, were not responsible for the Holocaust. The Holocaust took place in Europe. The Palestinians had nothing to do with it. And yet we lost our country to accommodate a Jewish state. So many people were angry at God. And angry that this has happened. And I felt that God was leading me to say, no, in spite of everything, God in Christ is with us. Even in the tragedy, in the midst of the tragedy, God is with us. And how can we maintain our faith when we are living under occupation? And so this Palestinian theology of liberation, helping people to become liberated from their own internal problems, and yet at the same time witnessing to a wider liberation, is what really got me going. And I came to Jerusalem with my family after serving for a number of years in Galilee. I came to Jerusalem in 85. And then less than 2 years later, the first Intifada started. And the Intifada, after the 1967 war, it brought back to my memories my childhood and what I experienced. And that's when I felt that God was guiding me into even a new ministry. And gradually, Sabeel came into being. And I left the church, serving the church, and dedicated my ministry to the ministry of Sabeel, which is an ecumenical organization. It is not really affiliated with any one denomination. It is a ministry that is trying to speak to all of our Christians, Palestinian Christians back home, and not only for them, but also to educate other people who are not Palestinians or Jewish in our area, to help them understand what has really happened. And that is the ministry of Sabeel. In the new book, which we have today, I tell the story of Sabeel and the way it has emerged. And so I invite you, in one sense, to really join Sabeel's journey. Because the word Sabeel, as many of you know, has a double meaning in Arabic. It means the way, and for us Christians, it reminds us that Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. And it means that we are on a journey. We are walking the Sabeel. We're walking the way which for justice, the way for peace, the way for reconciliation. So that's really Sabeel. At the same time, Sabeel has another meaning in Arabic, which is the spring, the spring of water. Because many people wanted not only to walk the roads of Palestine, but they wanted to find a spring to sit down, to drink, and to rest. And so somehow, over probably hundreds of years, the word Sabeel acquired the double meaning. It's a beautiful meaning, beautiful word. We find it also mentioned in the Quran. It is a Jewish also word. There is a Hebrew equivalent to Sabeel. And so it is a word that all of us can use in the Middle East, and all of us can join in this walking, in this journey, the journey for justice and peace. So in this book, I really try to help the reader to understand some of the politics, especially beginning with the First Intifada, the end of the First Intifada until today. But not only to understand the politics and the history, but also to understand the Bible and the theology. So if you are interested in history and politics, and you feel you are bogged down with the Bible and the theology, skip and go to the third section of the book, where I pick up other history and other politics and takes you to the end. But if you are connected with the church, I think you will find quite a bit of material that will help you to understand the Bible in a new way, not in a traditional way. So I lift up certain texts from the Bible, and I try to look at it from a Palestinian perspective. And I want to read some of those just to raise your interest, because I'm not going to go into details here. After all, I would like you to buy the book and get into it. But let me move from the political and historical, although there is also some theology there, but to move into the section where there is quite a bit of biblical material and theological reflection on it. So when I get to chapter 4, after part of the history and the politics, I deal with one of the most important issues. I've dealt with it in the first book. I deal with it continuously. I've written quite a bit about the theology of land. Because if you look at the situation back home and ask yourself, what is it all about? If I want to just summarize it in one sentence or one phrase, I would say it is all have to do with the theology of land. The Bible is a big book. You can have different theologies from the Bible. And today there are obviously Jewish Zionists, extremist Jews. There are Christian Zionists, millions of them in this country, who take the Bible and they have a very exclusive theology of land. That is, they use the Bible in order to support Israeli claims for the land. And they deny Palestinian claims for the land. I believe it's an exclusive theology of land. So I try in this chapter, chapter 4, to help people look at theology of land in a different way. Because I believe the Bible is not about an exclusive theology. It is about an inclusive theology that embraces rather than excludes other people. And so I think you will find this very interesting. In chapter 5, I look at Jonah. Most of us have been brought up on the story of Jonah. We all loved it as children, you know, how this man was swallowed by a big fish. And we always argued, can a big fish really swallow a man? And some of us focused on that and forgot the message of Jonah. For me, after reflecting on Jonah for a good number of years, I have found that Jonah is really the first Palestinian liberation theologian. Now, I am many times referred to as the first Palestinian theologian, but really, the first Palestinian theologian is Jonah. And I try to help the reader understand why. Because Jonah critiques the theology of his times, and probably, as scholars tell us, Jonah is probably the last book of the Old Testament to be written. So it's been written almost very close to the New Testament. And for me, you can jump from Jonah into the New Testament very easily if you understand the theology of Jonah. Because Jonah is really not only critiquing, but is giving you a different theology of land, a different theology of who the people of God are, and a different theology of God. And so I invite you to meet the first Palestinian liberation theologian, Jonah. Yeah. One of the problems that I encounter almost every time I come to the States is Christian Zionism. And most people do not know. In fact, some of my Muslim friends refuse to use the term Christian Zionist because they say, Naeem, you shouldn't use the word Christian and Zionist together because no Christian can be a Zionist. So how do you really put these two words together? For them, for the Muslims, Muslim friends, they say you cannot do it. How can you talk about a Christian and the Zionist? Well, in this chapter, I just introduce people to Christian Zionism in this country about their history and their politics. So I do it in such a way, without going into great details, but hopefully I will attract you enough to continue to read about this phenomenon, because today one of the obstacles to peacemaking back home is the presence of Christian Zionists in this country. In the way they are abusing the Bible, in the way they are using the Bible in order again to give Israel a greater claim over the land, instead of talking and working for justice as we should do as Christians, they are really negating Palestinian rights by using the Bible. And so it is unacceptable, and I try to really help people do that. I'm going to, just for the sake of time, not go through all these chapters, but let me lift up one or two other examples, and then I know that the pastor, the minister, is going to try to ask me some questions, and maybe we will have also some time for some of the comments that you may have. I also have a chapter here about the first suicide bomber, and that I believe that the first suicide bomber was Samson in the Bible, in the Old Testament. So I try to help people to understand suicide bombing. Suicide bombing, I try to use what Muslims say, what Christians say, and what other people talk when they talk about suicide bombing. So there is this chapter that you will find here. There are other chapters. I believe we as church went wrong in the fourth century when we followed the model of David, King David, and left the suffering servant. I believe that we are called to follow Christ as the suffering servant. The whole question of nonviolence is very important. I have more than one chapter about nonviolence. Sabil is committed to nonviolence. We believe that the occupation is evil. We believe that the oppression of the Palestinians by Israel is evil. It needs to stop. And we help people to work for the change through nonviolence. Because I believe if we are really the followers of Jesus Christ, we will abhor wars and violence, and we will resist evil through nonviolence. So I make a great plea for nonviolence, and I invite you to read this because I think you will find it very useful as you walk with us, journey with us through nonviolence to make changes back home. I have a chapter on Jerusalem that I invite you to read. I use four texts from the Bible, two from the Old Testament, two from the New, just to talk about Jerusalem. Because Jerusalem today is the key to peace. If there is no just resolution to the issue of Jerusalem, mark my word, there will never be peace. Because what Israel is trying to do today is make Jerusalem totally Jewish. And it is unacceptable, because Jerusalem is equally holy to Muslims and it is equally holy to Christians. We have to find a solution to Jerusalem that respects the holiness of the city to the three monotheistic faiths. And we must stop Israeli aggression and Israeli assault on Jerusalem, especially these days. The present Israeli government is very right-wing government, and it is really working so hard almost every day. I look at the internet, and I meet people who tell me, did you hear what the Israeli government is doing now today in Jerusalem? It's unbelievable. It is unacceptable. And I try to help people here that even if you look at the Bible, you can find some exclusive material that is unacceptable to us, but you can also find the inclusive way of sharing Jerusalem. And I invite you, especially keep in mind Psalm 87. I invite you to look at the book, because you might have never come across Psalm 87. It will change your life. And it's very difficult to understand it if you just read it. I hope that I have provided here a commentary on Psalm 87 that will help you see that how it can be used for peace rather than for injustice. And at the end of the book, I give a vision for peace. I warn the reader that you need to know, watch out and be concerned, because if Israel continues walking on its own journey, it will lead only to racism and apartheid. And there is one book, one chapter here, that lifts up the whole question of apartheid and racism, which Israel, as many Jews are saying today, has reached this point, that what we are experiencing today in Israel is racism. And there is no room for racism in the 21st century. And so all of us need to be concerned for the sake of Israelis, Israeli Jews, and for the sake of the Palestinians, because what we are after is a democracy, an equal democracy for all the people of the land. So I lift up a vision of peace. I lift up the vision for two-state solution, although I say in the book that the one state remains the ideal, but I believe it is more realistic today to talk about the two-state solution. We need to revive it, we need to save it, because Israel is making the two-state solution almost impossible. But this is what President Obama is talking about. This is what the United Nations has been talking about. I believe there is a possibility, and I give a vision why it can be doable. It can be doable only if we begin to look at peacemaking based on justice, and I think it is possible. And at the end of the book, I say this. We are not working only for justice. We're not only working to build peace. It is important to work for justice and to have peace. But peace is not the end of the road for us Palestinian Christians. And it's not the end of the road to many Jews and to many Muslims. The end of the road is reconciliation. So we are working very hard today to stop the injustice, to end the occupation, to build a viable Palestinian state alongside the State of Israel. But what is important, we want to finish with that and begin the long journey of reconciliation, to undo all the harm, to undo all the resentment, all the hatred that have been engendered over the last 60 years, and on the West Bank the last 40 years. We have to work so that we can have a new beginning, a beginning of peaceful relations, reconciliation. And for me, beyond reconciliation is even forgiveness. And many people, I believe many of our people, Palestinian Muslims and Palestinian Christians and many Jews, are ready to reconcile and even to forgive. This is the mission that we really have. This is what we are for. This is why this book is an invitation to you to know and then to become an advocate for peace and justice and reconciliation. So I invite you to read it. I invite you, if you don't understand it, put down, jot it down, and then you have to come and visit me in Jerusalem, and we can talk about it. Thank you very much.
That was Reverend Naeem Atik, the founder of the Sabeel Ecumenical Liberation Theology Center in Jerusalem, talking about his new book, A Palestinian Cry for Reconciliation. In a moment, we'll return to the question and answer segment from the presentation. You're listening to a special holiday broadcast of One Land, Many Voices, and you're tuned to KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge, and also available as streaming audio at KBOO's website at kboo.fm. Our speaker today is Reverend Naeem Atik, talking about his book, A Palestinian Cry for Reconciliation.
First of all, Dr. Atik, thank you for your remarks, the book, which I just finished reading as well, and for giving us some new insight through your personal experience and vantage point to give us a look into a complex world that we need to get our bearings for in order to make a way for peace and reconciliation in that region as participants as well.
Thank Thank you.
What I'd like to do is we're going to have what we're going to call a moderated conversation, which means, I think, three things. Elaine, are you here someplace? Do we have some cards? Do you have some cards? Okay. So we want to do three things tonight for about the next half hour, 40 minutes. I have some questions that probably could keep us here until morning, but I'm going to have a few questions that I will ask, and we'll have part of the conversation that way. If you'd like to write down a question and submit it, Elaine has some cards, so maybe just raise your hand right now if you have a question you'd like to do that way. Let her know, and we'll pass those out, and they can be collected and brought forward. The other way, at a couple different points, if you want to ask a question right from the pew, I'll bring the mic. That's why we have a roving mic today. So I'll try to do that. So we can either read a question or have you ask a question directly. But I'm going to start, and actually what I'd like to do is start in the way of how your book begins, because you referenced it in your talk, and it is the beginning of the book, where you reference your visit in 1958. Back to your home with your father in terms of that experience. And you may want to share a little bit more about what that experience was like. But the question that follows in some ways is, clearly as you begin your book and speak about that, my guess is that is magnified many, many times by people's personal experience of great pain in terms of really the experience of being in Palestine. And so the question in part is, how is it possible to really move forward toward reconciliation and peace when some of those wounds are so deeply embedded in families and in households from, you know, from years past?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll start on that basis. And we'll go.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I can only talk about my faith here. And I'm not implying that some people who might not approach this from a position of no faith, that they might not even reach to the same perspective. But for me, it has been a journey of faith. I mean, in 1958, we were allowed to go to Bisan, to my hometown, without having a permit. It was the only year, 10 years after the establishment of the State of Israel, that the government of Israel allowed all the Palestinians who were living in Israel and had become citizens of Israel to move around without permits. So my family went to Bisan, and my father could not even go into the houses that he had built with his hands. We were not allowed because the houses were already they had Jewish families living in them. And so when my father asked to go into the house, we were refused. And so I cannot talk about my pain. I want to talk about my father's pain, because I was a little boy when we left Bisan. But my father and my mother and my older brothers and sisters, it was a very unbelievable experience. The pain of being evicted from their home, and now they can go back to it, and they see that even our own furniture were used by other people who are living there in our home, and it was not our home. And actually, some of the tenants there were so rude that they really drove us out, you know. And my father, it was very, very painful. And what happens, my father got sick a few weeks later and never recovered. He got a stroke and then he passed away. So there is pain. But I believe that my faith, like many other stories, so it's not like I am claiming any uniqueness here. I hear stories like this all the time, where people have gone through so much pain and so much suffering, and yet by the grace of God, they were able to be reconciled and to forgive. And I feel this is where I am now. I really don't have, I am working for justice and I insist on justice, but I don't carry hate against the Jewish people. I want to be reconciled. I want the injustice, because injustice is bad for the oppressors. as much as it is bad for the oppressed. And so I believe that it is very important for us to continue to work for justice and to stop the injustice of Israel. And I'm open for reconciliation immediately. And I believe my family owes, Israel owes us compensation. I don't think I can go back to Bissan, because now Bissan is only Jewish town. We were the last ones to be driven out from Bissan. But it is very important to insist on the doing of justice. And yet at the same time, it is important to be open for reconciliation and forgiveness. That's the way I would believe. I believe.
The other question I want to ask Naeem in terms of personal experience, and then we'll talk more, and I will take questions from the audience as well shortly, is we have had several people from this congregation that went on a journey with Sabeel, and then we actually had somebody from a young adult go to the conference last August as well. And I know people who have traveled to Israel-Palestine who have been moved by the experience in terms of the ordeal of daily life. And actually, maybe interesting, how many have been to Israel-Palestine before, just to get a sense of that? My sense from talking to people, so quite a few.
Wonderful.
So, but for those of us who have not been there, it might be helpful to get a sense of what daily life is like in that way. Because I know you mentioned the notion of apartheid and the dual system that exists. President Carter also mentioned in his book. Can you describe to us in some simple ways for us to understand what kind of daily life is like in that system?
Yeah. I'm now focusing on the West Bank. The same thing is in Gaza. I cannot go to Gaza. I have been denied permits, so I cannot really talk about Gaza from a first-hand experience, at least for the last 10 years. But on the West Bank, I go there all the time. Life on the West Bank is very difficult, and I think President Obama knows this and is trying to deal with it. But first of all, there are over 600 checkpoints that divide the West Bank. These checkpoints, you might imagine that Israel would want to put the checkpoints between Israel and the occupied territories. But these checkpoints are inside the West Bank, dividing Palestinian villages from one another. So you cannot go from one Palestinian area to another Palestinian area. So they are there to control people, to humiliate them. It has nothing to do with security. I mean, Israel will tell you it's for security, but they really are not for security. So this disrupts life continuously for people, because they cannot move from one place to another. If you are sick, it's not easy to get to the hospital because of these checkpoints. More than this, now there are the wall. Some of you have seen the wall as a barrier. Israel calls it a fence. But, I mean, you've seen, you know, how high it is. It's not a fence. You know, it is to take Palestinian land and to control Palestinian life. So life is really very, very difficult. Then you have these settlements, and most of the people in the settlements, especially in the heart of the West Bank, these are extremist people. They're very extremist. They can kill you in the name of God and in the name of the Bible. And it's okay. They're usually not tried. And if it is a trial, then it is just not really there. We know many who have not been tried. We know many people. So life for the Palestinians is a daily suffering for them. And I think President Obama and the American administration has been trying to ask Israel to do away with some of these checkpoints that make life very difficult. We know of cases where women have given birth on checkpoints because they were not allowed to get to the hospital. So one can go on and on, but it is very, on a daily basis, life is very difficult for the people on the West Bank. And that's the way it used to be also in Gaza.
Here's a couple of questions. I'm going to take a couple from the audience. These two are somewhat similar vein in terms of movement forward, but one of them kind of anticipated one I wanted to ask as well, which is, are Palestinian Christians in a unique position to bring or to begin bringing about reconciliation and forgiveness? The second part of it is a different question, but kind of maybe you might follow it up as well, is, has world Christianity been doing enough to help bring about peace? So the first one really is more focused on the unique role the Palestinian Christians might bear in the situation, and the other one is really kind of addressed more to world Christianity and the role we have or haven't played.
I don't think it is... I don't think I can say that the Palestinian Christians, all Palestinian Christians, are able really to bring, or easier for them to bring, reconciliation. I would like to think that. I mean, we are equipped because of our faith and because we have been entrusted in the ministry of reconciliation. I'd like to think that we can do it. But many times, Palestinian Christians are like Palestinian Muslims. They all are Palestinians. They're all living under occupation. And sometimes I find Muslims who are better reconcilers than Christians. And sometimes, thank God, I find Christians who are also reconcilers. So I don't think we can totally differentiate, because Israel has never differentiated between a Palestinian Christian and a Palestinian Muslim. Never, never. Because Israel was after the land and not the people. So Israel wanted all the people, whether they're Christians or Muslims, to be cleansed, to get them out, to be evicted. And sometimes Israel had tried to show favoritism, but thank God most of our people know that this is only deception. You know, it's only trying to divide the community, the Palestinian community, between Christian and Muslim. But I find that Palestinian Muslims and Palestinian Christians have extremists, and I find many of them that are open to reconciliation, but all of us are trying to work for justice and for ending the occupation, and we are working together for that. Now, on the world stage, again, we need to look at the world. We have, I would say, all the mainline churches, Methodist, Presbyterians, UCC, Disciples of Christ, Lutherans, Episcopalians, all the mainline churches as denominations have wonderful, wonderful resolutions against the injustice. Every one of your denominations has many resolutions against the injustice of the government of Israel and for justice and peace. The problem is that there are millions of Christian Zionists here who are all for Israel. And that's why in the book I have this one chapter trying to help people understand this. So we have been very much supported by the mainline organizations. On their advocacy, we've been supported. That is always against the injustice of Israel, but also in a humanitarian way. Many of our organizations, institutions, are supported by your churches. Every one of you. Every one of your churches. So there is quite a bit of support, but at the same time, you need to understand that on the other hand, there is quite a bit of pain coming from the Christian Zionists who are against us and who are against all the Palestinians, whether they're Muslims or Christians. So they don't even see us as Christians, their brothers and sisters. They don't. They're against us as much as they are against the Muslims. So you have those two components within the church in this country. And I that's why I tell people, please stay connected with your denomination and impress upon them to implement most of the good resolutions that your denomination has taken.
And once again, you're listening to a lecture by Reverend Naeem Atik, the founder of the Sabeel Ecumenical Liberation Theology Center in Jerusalem. And you're listening to a special holiday broadcast of One Land, Many Voices. And you're tuned to KABU listener-sponsored community radio at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge. Also available as streaming audio at KABU's website at kabu.fm. And now the conclusion to the question and answer segment from the presentation. Our speaker today is Reverend Naeem Atik, talking about his latest book, A Palestinian Cry for Reconciliation.
Thank you. Toward the end of your book, you mentioned something, and then there's a question that was written that kind of follows up on it. Toward the conclusion, you talk about four basic questions that really the Israeli government kind of needs to respond to in order for peace and reconciliation to move forward. And I'll just read those so that we can all hear them. And then the question that is on the card is, how can we without force, get Israelis to withdraw from illegal settlements throughout the West Bank? It seems there has been so much money and time dedicated to these elaborate settlements, like settlers in America. They seem to set on keeping what they've got and then expanding it. In your book, you mentioned the four basic questions. I think that might be helpful for the audience to hear as well. The four questions he mentions are, is the government of Israel willing to accept the principle of sharing the land with the Palestinians on the basis of justice and fairness as defined by international law? Second question is Israel willing to accept the Palestinians as equal partners in peacemaking? Is Israel willing to accept the fact that Palestinians have equal rights to the land? And then the fourth question is Israel willing to share Jerusalem, which you referenced earlier in your talk? So the question that somebody wrote was, how without force might we encourage responses, perhaps, to those questions?
Today we believe that President Obama is able to make a difference. President Obama. We also know that no peace will emerge without the United States' involvement. The United States has a very large Jewish community that has been very, very influential over the years in really directing, guiding American foreign policy in the Middle East. And I think President Obama knows this very well. And I believe that it is possible, if President Obama continues on his on the line that he has taken and the emphasis that he has given, I think he can do it. But he needs your help. He really needs your help. And we see certain signs, certain indications that it is possible. Now, at the same time, I understand that the pressure is mounting so much on President Obama to leave Israel alone. Just a few days ago, President Obama met with American Jewish leaders, and he made it clear to them that Israel needs to change. But some of them told President Obama that they don't like the way he's going and what he's doing in pressuring Israel. So there is an accumulation of so many, many years of special privilege which Israel has had from the United States. And so I believe that we are now at a time in which peace is possible. If there is one person or one country that can stop the expansionism and the injustice of the state of Israel. And the only country that can do it is the United States. And I am not exaggerating. No other country can stop Israel. Israel today does what it likes. This is what Israel is doing. And no one has been able to stop it. And so we really need President Obama. And you know, President Obama, the fact that he appointed George Mitchell, great idea. President Carter is now very much involved. He's always been involved, but now very visible. He's coming all the time. I met with him 2.5 weeks ago in Jerusalem. And he is talking to President Obama on a continual basis. So I think this is where the hope is coming from nowadays. That's why we really need, because you know that the Jewish community in this country is very, very active, and they are getting to the White House. We need to get to the White House, and just to say to Obama, please continue, insist on justice for the Palestinians. Please, we are with you, we're praying for you, we need to do it. And we, as I try to emphasize in this book, we are not against Israel. We are not against the Jewish people in Israel. We are against the injustice, and we are against the oppression. That needs to stop. But Israel can survive if it stops its injustice. And President Obama can, I think, contribute to this. And when the Americans move, as our experience shows, Europe will move. Europe will move. And when Europe moves, the rest of the world will move. So I think it is very important for President Obama to take the lead. He has done it, but he needs to continue. If he stops, it'll be tragic.
Thank you, Naeem. I'm going to take a question or two from out in the audience as well, so I'm going to do Oprah for a minute here. If somebody wants to raise their hand. While I'm doing that, the question might be maybe a follow-up on President Obama. When he gave his speech in Saudi Arabia and really addressed the Muslim community, you have a sense of the reaction within different parts of Israel and Palestine in terms of that speech and its effect. And then somebody have a question. I'll go back to you. If somebody have a question you want to ask from the pew. Okay, I'll wander back, okay? So if you take that question first, what kind of reaction did you feel?
Generally speaking, I think the Muslim world, the Arab world, were very, very supportive of what President Obama has said. But you need to realize that we have been burnt so many times in the past that we're very cautious. We are very cautious. We know what he said was wonderful, but we want to see whether he can implement what he promised, especially because we know the power of the Christian Zionists in this country and the power of AIPAC in this country, the pro-Israel lobby in the States. And so, can he do it? This is the big question. But I've looked at some surveys immediately after President Obama's speech, positive, very much. You know, looking at President Obama as really a great hero for peace, and saying, let's just wait and see if he can really do it. You know, so I think it has been very positive response.
Naeem, I'm all in the back. I have a question back here. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your talk and appreciate very much your call for peace, but I wish very much, if that would apply to the reality, because I don't think that we really can create peace if Israel is continuing the violence, the daily violence against children and against the Palestinian people. And I don't understand very much how can we resist the violence without violence. Yeah. Really, this is a real question. And the second point, although I appreciate very much the stand of the American people and not necessarily the administration of the American administration, and we need the support of the American people, but I think also we should very much rely on the local and internal factor, which is a decisive to the struggle. Thank you very much. And I think it's really a journey of faith, and also it's a journey of suffering of the Palestinian people, a daily journey of hard life. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I will answer the first part. I did not really get the second part of the question, but I can talk to you maybe later. But our people have tried violence and tried also nonviolence. The first Intifada was very nonviolent, and I witnessed that in Jerusalem. But the second Intifada has been very much violent. I personally am committed to nonviolence. And I believe that the first Intifada showed us that if we had continued to train our people on the power of nonviolence, I think we could have made a bigger difference and we could have seen a greater difference than what we have seen so far. Israel, there is one chapter here about the injustice, about the violence and the breeding of violence. This, where did the violence begin? I commend it to you because Israel has painted us as Palestinians, it painted us as inherently violent people. Now, I try to prove, and I give many examples, that this is a lie, this is a myth. But I tell you, having said that, I would say that we have barely scratched the surface of nonviolence. I am convinced that the only thing that will make us win against the violence of the government of Israel and the state of Israel is only by having a national nonviolent movement in Palestine. I wish to God, I wish that President Abbas will stand one day before the TV and will tell the people of Palestine, we've used the violence and it's not getting us anywhere. If we can, we need to champion nonviolence. I don't know how much you know about the power of nonviolence. I've done quite a bit of research. I tried to put some of those thoughts in this book. Please read it. It is not, violence will not get us anywhere. Israel has a greater amount of violence through its power, through its military, than we will ever have. We need to abandon the violence. We need to train, and there are many people who are training our people today. There are Muslims who are doing training, nonviolent training. I have invited one time a couple of Muslims who were training our own Christians about nonviolence. So I just want to make the idea here, or the thought, that it is not the Muslims who are violent. We all have violence in us. When we see the violence of the soldiers and the army of Israel. But I believe we can defeat that through nonviolent campaigns. And I talk about it in this book in a greater details, because today, if Gaza will use nonviolence, and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, women and children and men, every day walk, march to the borders, Israel will be defeated. Because Israel is banking on the fact that we are violent and we will respond to violence. And we need to break that, because our people are not violent people. And in this book, I quote some psychiatrists who are saying that the easiest way to get a person to become violent is by insult and humiliation. And this is exactly what Israel has been doing to the Palestinians. Through insult and humiliation, we have turned to violence. And we need to stop that and pick up the nonviolence, and we will defeat the Israeli violence.
You've been listening to a special holiday broadcast of One Land, Many Voices. This program featured Reverend Naeem Atik, founder of the Sabeel Ecumenical Liberation Theology Center in Jerusalem. And if you've missed any of our previous programs, or if you just want to listen again to one of our past guests, all of our programs are available on demand at the KABU website at kabu.fm or at the PDX Justice Media Productions website at pdxjustice.org, where you'll also find links to other great video and audio programming. If you want to write to us at One Land Many Voices, please send us an email message at pdxjustice@riseup.net. We'd love to hear from you. Our theme music is provided by the wonderful oud musician Rahim Alhaj. We open our program with Dance of the Palms, and our closing music is Yearning, both from the album Iraqi Music in a Time of War, available from VoxLox Documentary Sound Art. For myself and on behalf of my co-host, Hala Gores, a very happy holiday season and a very happy and peaceful and more just new year. Thank you.